ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you all to the Sunday feast program. Today we will be discussing a very interesting subject matter, which is the incarnation of Kalki, Kalki avatar. So as you all are already aware that we are doing this Dashavatar series, and this is the last in that series. So primarily what I will be discussing in today's class is that I'll be focusing on five different aspects. There are two sources of knowledge, in fact three sources of knowledge as far as Kalki avatar is concerned. Most of these sources speak exactly the same thing, and this is not an incarnation which has already appeared, therefore the information is less. And there is a book called the Kalki Puran, which is having the life of Kalki avatar. But I will not be referring to the Kalki Puran so much. There is an unlimited amount of information available in the Kalki Puran. But whenever we refer any books of knowledge, we always find the authenticity as far as the parampara is concerned. And therefore, our source of information, source of knowledge, as far as Kalki avatar is concerned, we will restrain to what is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we will try to understand based on what the Bhagavatam teaches us. So, Srimad Bhagavatam gives a very interesting analogy to make us understand what or what is the aspect that this Kalki avatar is trying to teach us. Each of the incarnations of the Lord primarily teach one aspect. So it is explained that just like children, you know, when a small child goes to a beach and he is playing with the sand in the beach, creating castles, creating forts, creating so many things on the beach. And then when the time is up, the father tells the child, "Leave it and come with me." The child is so much attached to those castles that he has built on sand, he's not ready to let go. I've seen so many children crying, you know, when they are told, "Come home." They say, "This is my home." They actually feel that this is their home because they have built every wall of that house with their own sweet hands. And when the father tells them, "Come," they start crying. And then the father has to forcibly drag them, take them, you know, away. So Kalki avatar comes in a very similar way. Most people create huge economic backgrounds, huge castles in the sands of time. And at some point of time, people are so attached to these castles, not letting go. So Kalki avatar comes and forcibly takes each one away. So this is something which is very interesting, I thought, which makes us understand the mood of Kalki avatar. Of course, Jayadeva Goswami in his Dashavatara Stotra, he says, "Milacha nivaha nidane kalayasi karavalam dhumaketum ivakim api karalam." He says, "Milacha nivaha." He says, primarily why Kalki avatar comes is to destroy all the milachas. And how he does it? Dhumaketum iva. He says, Jayadeva Goswami says, Kalki comes like a comet. You know, sometimes he's, you know, we find these meteorological comets coming. It's zoom, they just pass by. So Kalki comes and he just passes by, and when he is gone, you know, practically thousands and millions of people are destroyed. So many people who try to understand and speculate what Kalki is, their understanding is that he is like a robot, you know, a man machine, who comes and it destroys people left, right, center and moves away. Of course, our speculation is never going to be enough to understand how Kalki will do it. But the fact that he will do it is very much there. Therefore, Jayadeva Goswami, he says, Keshavadrita Kalki Sharira Jaya Jagdisha Hare. So in this world, if you just do a survey of what's happening in today's, spiritual societies, or what is the latest spiritual market in today's times, you'll find that there are a lot of Kalki avatars. In fact, I think more famous than Krishna is Kalki avatar. So there are so many people who claim themselves to be Kalki avatar even now. And very interestingly, many of these people are actually competing with each other. They know the market is small. So they are trying to prove that who is the real Kalki avatar. So I'll speak about one or two of these special Kalki avatars that have taken birth in the recent past. So there was one man who had, at a very old age, about 35, 40, he realized that he is Kalki. And Kalki, if you study the Kalki Puran, Kalki has his wife whose name is Padmavati. So he calls himself as Kalki and he calls his wife as Padma. And generally the way in which they are worshipped is they sit on a throne and they are giving blessings to people. And something that is very common in many of these mystic type of experiences is that they always talk about miracles. And something very interesting, Charles Darwin, the one who has written this Origin of Species, there is a reason why he wrote this Origin of Species book. It's very interesting. Nobody, in the science books, whatever we have studied of science, we have never thought the history of Darwin. We only thought the history of human evolution, what Darwin spoke. But if you study the history of Darwin, why he did what he did, you come to know many things. So there were three reasons why Darwin made this theory, of evolution. The first reason was that he was a very devout Christian and he was going to the church regularly, attending, masses, so many things. But he saw that there three things happened in his life which completely disturbed him. The first thing was that he would go to the church regularly and he would find that people are constantly talking about miracles. They would say that this miracle happened here, this miracle happened here. But Darwin, he never experienced any miracle in his life. So he was thinking, what nonsense, and they're talking about miracles, nothing is happening only. So Darwin was like slightly put off by that. And then he saw that these people were talking so much about God, but many of these priests, many of these people who are holding these positions in the church, they were so much after money, so much after wealth, so much after power and control. He said he couldn't take that. He said, how can people who are giving up, living renounced lives, be so much attached to power and position? And the third thing happened in his life, his very young son died. So when these three things came together in Darwin's life, Darwin said, that's it. Now I have to find my own path. So he set out, on this voyage to study these different species with one thing in mind, to prove that God is not the creator and God is not the controller. So therefore, he systematically made his whole theory to prove that God is not the creator and God is not the controller. And therefore, if you study the evolution theory, it systematically tries to explain how there is no need of God to control at all. One species, when it goes to another environment, it evolves and adopts certain, lifestyles and certain organs. But of course, we understand the defects in the Darwin's theory. So many defects. But if you go and try to see the motivation why this person made it, you understand that he was frustrated with these kind of miracles. No miracles were happening only. So these kind of incarnations or so-called incarnations, they thrive on these miracle aspects. They thrive on the need of people to experience miracles. Like, one of these people, the follower, he says that the reason I believe that this is Kalki is because they have a very interesting type of worship. They worship the paduka or the footwear of this Kalki Bhagavan. And they put that footwear on their head. So one lady, she put the footwear on her head and she started trembling. She started, having lot of tremors and things like that. So she said, he has to be God. He has given me such a shock. So understanding is, you put your hand in the electric socket, you might get a better shock. So if that's what you want to understand, that somebody is God, then we can give you better ways to do it. And somebody else, you know, he said that this, when I put the footwear on my head, the footwear started, you know, rising up in the air. Things like that. So these people believe and are happy with these small so-called miracles that happen. And they feel that, my God, this person actually is the incarnation of Kalki. Of course, parallelly, there are court cases going on. Parallelly, there are cases going on of molestation, of, you know, attempts of rape and so many things going on. And there is also a parallel construction company called Kalki Construction, which is opened up using all the donations, you know, making black money into white money and things like that. And of course, in the middle of all this are people who are genuinely trying to understand who is God, genuinely trying to understand and appreciate whether Kalki, they understand that Kalki is going to come. Unfortunately, they don't understand who is Kalki. So anyone who speculates to be Kalki, you know, they are ready to invest their time and energy in. So there's another person who, you know, is 100% sure that this fellow is not Kalki. So he makes a website, you know, proving that this person cannot be Kalki. So one of the things that he brings out is, the Supreme Lord is beautiful. Look at the face of this person. He looks like a criminal. So he's like, you know, trying to analyze. He says, the Supreme Lord has, you know, his wife named Padmavati. Look at this lady. She doesn't even look beautiful. And then something very interesting. So at this, just like he is trying to prove that this fellow is bad, simultaneously trying to prove that I am the right one. You know? So nowhere in his website, in the beginning, you'll find his photo. But towards the end, you'll find one photo of this fellow. And that person, believe me, looks worse than the previous one. But he never compares the beauty of himself with the Supreme Lord. Somehow, you know. And then he talks about how the wife of the hands of this man, you know, he says, Kalki Avatar, in his hands, there are symbols of the conch, of the sword, and so many symbols. And he has a picture of these hands, you know, actual picture drawn of these hands. He says, if you want to believe that this person is God, is Kalki, tell him to show his hands. Can you see the symbols? But at the same time, he doesn't show his hands, right? And then he says that something very interesting. The Kalki Puran, it talks about how Kalki got married with Padmavati. And it says that Padmavati, she had got a benediction from Lord Shiva that anybody who sees her with lusty eyes will immediately become a woman. You know, and then so Padmavati she is like princess of a daughter of a king, and many, many kings come and try to marry her, and all of them become women as soon as they see her, you know. So because they've become women and they are so attracted to her, what they become with, they become her maid servants. So her maid servants are increasing in number. And then finally Kalki comes, and you know, and Padmavati sees him, he doesn't transform into a woman. So she marries him. So the other guy, he asks, you know, that does Padmavati have the same character as the original Padmavati? And then he says that he married a woman, you know, some name he calls, and he says, this woman 100% was like Padmavati. And then he says how he does it. They see how people can speculate so much. He says that this woman whom I married, I never wanted to marry her, but this woman, she always dominated over men. Therefore, men became like women in front of her. You understand? So he's saying that when Padmavati would look at a man and the man would become a woman, he's saying, if this lady looks at a man, then man behaves like a woman. You see, this is 100% speculation. He says, I am the only man who remains a man in front of her, you know, like that. So he's saying, I am Kalki, you know. So the point is that if it is such cheap things which takes to prove that I am Kalki, or you know, somebody else is not Kalki, then practically we will be left with millions of choices of who is Kalki and who is not, right? So, of course, we are not interested in such cheap understandings of who Kalki is and who is not, but rather we are interested in understanding how Lord Kalki, Kalki Avatar, incarnates and actually comes in assistance to his devotees. So, we will spend some time understanding some things from the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm referring to the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 2, where there is instructions, first symptoms of the age of Kali. What happens, which is like a prologue or something which is preceding the appearance of Lord Kalki. And then we will see how each of these symptoms are so powerful that it needs the appearance of the Supreme Lord to be able to actually counteract it or handle it. And some of these symptoms are some things that we can see immediately, so at least some glimpses of it. Some of the symptoms are some things that we have to wait to watch it manifesting and unfolding, right? And this age, which is Kali Yuga, it is explained that it is personified by a person called Kali Purush, who is like the personification of this age. And there's an explanation of how this person, Kali, who is like the personification of this age, who is practically influencing each and every one of us at every given point of time, was born. So it is explained that from the back of Brahmaji, sin personified was born. The sin personified was called as Adharma. And Adharma, so the whole concept of how Kali was born is given in a very, almost like a drama, you know. So it explains Adharma married Mithya, which means falsehood. So in Adharma, which is, you know, lack of religion, irreligion, married falsehood, then the result of that marriage was two people were born. One was a boy and one was a girl. The boy was known as Damba and the girl was known as Maya. And these were brother sisters. But the influence of, you know, bad character is that the brother and sister together procreated and they had two children. The children were greed, was a boy, and there was a girl called cunningness. And these boy and girl, brother sisters again, they procreated together and they gave birth to two children, Krodha, which is anger, which is a boy, and Himsa, which is a girl. Again, these boy and girl together, they gave birth to two other children. One is known as Kali, which is the boy, the one that is the dreaded boy. And a daughter whose name was Harsh Speech. And these together, they got two children, one boy whose name was Bhai or Fear, and a girl named Mrityu or Death. And these together, they got together and gave birth to two children. One was a boy named Hell, and there was a girl named Excessive Pain or Yatna. So the point is that when there is sin and sin gets in contact with falsehood, what is given birth is Damba, which is pride and illusion, Maya. And when they get together, when somebody is proud about what he has and he is under illusion of who he is, then what comes out is excessive greed and cunningness. You know, so if you don't have something, you want it, but you're proud about yourselves. So you become cunning, exploit, to take out. And then when somebody is greedy and somebody is cunning, anybody who comes into his way, he naturally becomes angry and violent. And anger and violence, when they are together, then naturally what is born is the age of Kali. Therefore, Kali Yuga is called the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. And natural associate of Kali Yuga is harsh speech. You know, everybody in this age, one of the most prominent qualities in this age is harsh speech. Contradictory to what Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about, you know, having pleasing speech. And the natural result of somebody who is influenced by this age of Kali and who is having harsh speech is that it brings to fear of the unknown, and finally it brings to death. And after death also there is another place, that is hell, which is accompanied with excessive pain, unlimited pain. So this is like the cycle or the flow of how Kali Yuga works in our lives. So each one of us, the moment we associate with sin, which is the beginning, it ends in hell, which is the end. And in the middle, we experience so many other things, right? So therefore, we will first try to understand what are the symptoms in the age of Kali. And after we understand the symptoms, we will try to see how Kalki Avatar incarnates, manifests, and does certain pastimes. And then we will summarize how we can get, can understand or, you know, apply some things that from this incarnation which seems to be totally irrelevant to our lives. And then, of course, we will summarize all the incarnations together. So Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12th canto, it begins with an understanding of what the symptoms of the age of Kali are. So the first symptom in the age of Kali, it is explained that dharma will diminish. That is, religion will decrease. So we can understand in today's world how there are many religions who are trying to modify themselves to adopt to science. Like there are many religions in this world where what they do is that they manipulate the religious text to accommodate science in them. You know, because science and religion seems to be talking two different things. So people are losing faith in science many times because they have faith in religion. So what these religions do is that they change the text of the religious principles to accommodate scientific principles in them. Why? So that they feel that by doing this, they will have more people connected to their congregation, more people connected to them. So it seems to be like a very easy way to keep people inspired in spiritual life. But the point is that when such things are done, spiritual life doesn't flourish, but rather spiritual life vanishes, right? So this is the first symptom in the age of Kali, that dharma will diminish. The second symptom in the age of Kali is that truth will decrease. Every word is a lie, you know. Like I was visiting some house and the parents were telling me that the children nowadays don't speak truth at all. We can't believe what they're saying is true or no. 99% of the time they speak lies only, you know. So this is not just a case of children, this is a case of everyone. You know, the boss is trying to, you know, have these sheets or softwares how to monitor an employee. Every moment, hour by hour, monitoring of the employee, what he does. Now, if the employee himself doesn't have the principle of truth in his heart, there are 101 different ways how you can cheat the boss. In spite of maintaining a perfect Excel sheet, right? Because technology can always fail. And so many things can happen by which you can cheat. So truthfulness, So the point is that why is truth decreasing? Because Prabhupada explains very interestingly in one purport that truth is decreasing because people are putting their interest in the relative truths of this world and not focusing on the absolute truth. There's a comparison between Vasudev in Krishna's pastime and Dasharatha Maharaj in Lord Ram's pastime. It is explained that Dasharatha Maharaj, he was attached to the relative truth. What was the relative truth? The relative truth was that he had given a promise to his wife, Kaikeyi. He had given two benedictions to his wife, Kaikeyi. And he was thinking that for me, as a king, I have to set an example. So naturally, I have to fulfill these boons of Kaikeyi. And one of the boons was that Ram should be sent to the forest. So Dasharatha Maharaj, he didn't want Ram to go to the forest. He was actually praying, it is explained in the Ramayana, that he was praying that, he was praying and hoping that Ram will say, I will not go. He was actually hoping. He was actually telling Ram, please tell that I don't want to go. But he never told Ram, don't go. So he was so much attached to following the relative truth that he never had the guts to tell Ram, don't go. But he was thinking that Ram will break the promise. So he was attached to the relative truth and he didn't want Ram to be attached to any truth. He wanted Ram to be, you know, not following the principles of dharma. So this, the Acharya has explained, is a person who for the sake of relative truth has rejected the absolute truth. Absolute truth is Lord Ram himself. and to save or to fulfill his relative truth, to show that I am a great dharmic person, Dasharatha Maharaj sent Ram away, like sent the absolute truth away. But on the other hand, if you study the life of Vasudev, he told Kamsa that I'll get all the eight children to you. He did it when it came to first six children. The seventh child, of course, was a miscarriage, or Balaramji went away. But the eighth child, who actually appeared, when Krishna actually appeared, he forgot truth. He forgot, he very conveniently went and replaced Krishna and got the girl here. And he never told anybody. He didn't even tell his wife. He didn't tell anyone the truth for how many years? Till Krishna actually came. 11 years, Vasudev was engaged in telling lies. That means, for 11 years, Vasudev was attached to the absolute truth. And Dasharatha Maharaj, for 14 years, of course, he never lived for 14 years, but whatever number of time he lived, he was attached to the relative truth only. Therefore, it is explained that the destination of Dasharatha Maharaj, he went only to the heavenly planet. But Vasudev went back to the spiritual world. Because Dasharatha was attached to the absolute, to the relative truth, he reached a relative destination, you know, by which you can come back. The cycle continues. But when Vasudev was attached to the absolute truth, he reached an absolute destination by which he will never come back. So, you know, the principles, you know, why truth is decreasing in this world is because people are attached to the relative truths of this world. And relative truth means it is relative in nature. It will always change. So it's not stable. So therefore, it is explained that one has to be attached to the absolute truth for one to be actually truthful in life. And then another symptom of the age of Kali is explained that tolerance or forgiveness is diminishing. So that means people are not ready to tolerate the smallest of misgivings, the smallest of mistakes of one another at all. One time I was walking in, going in the local train, and you know, I got into the train. By mistake, I put my foot on somebody's legs, you know. I don't know whether I did it very heavily or low, but the other person, he retaliated very heavily. He started blasting. Only when he saw I was in saffron dress, you know, he kind of kept quiet, you know. So the point is that it seemed to be a simple mistake. But because people do not have the ability to tolerate or forgive simple things, therefore they completely blast. And the reason why people are not able to tolerate or forgive is because there is no method available in today's world to purify the mind. Because the mind is impure, the mind is restless. The mind is always, you know, connected to all these petty things. So it is explained that the mind of great devotees is like a deep ocean. The ocean, if you see from two levels. One level is when you see the surface of the ocean is like very calm or kind of ruffling, you know. But when you see it on a much deeper level, the ocean is absolutely still. So if you see it from two levels, on a surface level, you'll see waves, ruffling, so many things. But when you go deeper and deeper and deeper in the ocean, you'll find that the water is practically not moving. It almost looks like, you know, as if it is in the normal environment. Why? It is explained that the mind of the great devotees is like the depths of the ocean. Very deep. And the mind of people who are not connected to something spiritual is like the waves of the ocean, always fluctuating, you know. So because people are so much connected only with externals, constantly mind is fluctuating, you know. So one of the latest diseases in today's world, you know, is something called hyperactive syndrome, you know. So where people for 2 minutes cannot do one thing. They have to constantly be doing something or the other, you know. So constantly changing. I mean, you tell them to sit and read for 1 hour, they will go mad. Therefore, people, you know, they need certain type of agitation to keep their mind active, to, you know, make them feel that they're doing something. 1 hour doing the same thing, they feel they're doing nothing, you know. So the reason why the mind is so agitated, so restless, is because people are engaged in small-mindedness. People are engaged in things that are small-minded, petty things they are involved in. Because people are not thinking of deep concepts, therefore they are, all their thoughts are only superficial concepts. Therefore, in the Ramayana, when Valmiki Muni, he went with Bharadwaj Muni, they were walking, and they came across this Tamasa river, and Valmiki Muni entered into the river, and he saw that there was a place, the place where he entered, it was dirty, you know, it was filled with a lot of muck and so many things. So he said, he told Bharadwaj Muni something very interesting. Generally, nobody ever thinks about such intricate details of the scriptures. So he said, he told Bharadwaj Muni that let us go and find a place which is clean. And he said, the minds of great devotees is like a clean, crystal clear pond, crystal clear water. And the minds of people of this world who are attached to small, petty-minded things is like water which is filled with all these, you know, dirt. So they shifted and they went to have a bath in another place. So the point is that because people are so petty-minded, so much interested in small things, they are not able to tolerate and forgive each other for their smallest mistakes. Like there was one husband and wife, they were discussing, and in their discussion, they got violent with each other. You know, there's something small, they couldn't tolerate each other, they got really violent with each other. And because they became so angry with each other, the wife, she threatened the husband that if you don't listen to me, I'll throw the child out of the window. The husband said, no problem, go ahead. He thought, you know, so she actually picked up the child and threw him out of the window. And later on, they realized what they have done. And both of them jumped out of the window and all three died. So the point is, because one is not able to tolerate small provoking situations in life, why? Because the mind is so much superficial. So when one learns to become deep in his mind, deep in his contemplation, the superficial things don't affect so much. Another effect in symptom in the age of Kali is that mercy is decreasing. So all living entities in this world are connected to each other by their participation in the divine existence of God. When living entities understand that they are participants in the divine existence of God, that means they are part and parcels of the same God, then what they do is that they deal with each other, their connections are strong. So just like, for example, if there is like this chandelier, the chandelier is hanging from the rope, but each one of these candles in the chandelier are connected to each other because they're connected to that middle rope. Similarly, Krishna, God, is that middle rope, and all the living entities are connected to God through that middle rope. But when different living entities feel they are disconnected, or they are not actually related to each other at all, therefore, that creates a lack of mercy. That creates a lack of compassion. But when each living entity feels that they are connected to that supreme living entity, supreme God, then they feel that they are connected to each other, then they can become merciful to each other. So people in this world are not just merciless to each other, but they are also merciless to themselves. They destroy their own body also by consuming liquor, consuming, you know, intoxicants, so many things. Why they are not able to be merciful to each other? Because they do not think that they are connected to the Supreme Lord. So the connection to the Supreme Lord is a very interesting concept. What this connection to the Supreme Lord does to us, first of all, it connects each other, and it also connects us to the Supreme Lord. Just like in an electronic circuit, now there may be many wires. You know, if you see complicated electronic circuits, there are many wires. They don't seem that they are connected to each other. But because all of them are deriving energy from the same power, they are all connected to each other. And if one wire is removed, then the whole circuit stops functioning. So similarly, when all the living entities together understand that the supreme power is coming from the powerhouse, the Supreme Lord, then they understand the value of each other. And even if one living entity is disconnected, the pain is felt. Right? So the mercy element will come only when there is connection to the Supreme Father. And of course, balam, strength in this world is decreasing. So we find that already. So most people, like for example, in the previous times, there would be practically every person in the village could, you know, lift huge amounts of load and without any problem. Nowadays, most people, you tell them to lift something, they will say that we have a back problem, that we have this problem, we have that problem. So many problems. I mean, I'm just surprised. 10 years back, I don't remember hearing that two people had back problems. But here, nowadays, every second person having a back problem. I was seeing, like, a few weeks back, I was meeting one 15-year-old boy going with a strap, you know, back support. Back collapsed completely. Why? Constantly sitting in one posture in front of the computer for years and years and years. You know, the hand which was used before to lift huge amount of water from the well or so many things, plow the field, the same hand is used to type on keyboard. So, you know, something very interesting. Somebody sent me a joke that he said, how to lose weight? You click the mouse 15 million times. You lose 100, you know, 5 kilos of weight, something like that. You know? So the point is that people are so much used to just these hand movements. Now as new diseases come up by which this particular bone gets, you know, some kind of infection. And people have to actually amputate this part of their hand. This is like a new trend. So many people are facing this. Those are constantly using computer and mobile phones. Now, it might seem that, you know, why are these diseases coming up now? And why is strength not increasing now? You know, there's always an analysis. Before, we never found any products having detailed analysis of how much calcium is there, how much carbohydrates is there, how much is there. Exact. Now we know exactly how many calories you're eating every day. Every meal you can calculate exact how many calories you're eating, but no strength. So what is the point in calculating all the calories if no strength is there in the body, right? Before, you couldn't calculate the calories, but you had strength at least, right? So the reason is that the concept of balam, energy, comes from the source of energy, which is supreme energetic. And when you're exploiting nature to manipulate energies to suit your needs, that you might, you know, externally seem to be catching the energy, but you are losing the essence of the energy. So Krishna in the Gita, it says, I am the strength of the strong. So you might have externally the calories, but the strength element is missing because the Supreme Lord is missing in people's lives. And smriti, memory, is decreasing. So, and I was in the previous times, people would remember phone numbers so much, you know. Now people don't even remember their own numbers because they SMS each other their number. So, they don't, so if somebody loses his phone, first of all, he has to try to call somebody who has his number. And nowadays, you know, these mobile phones having increasing number of contacts, you know, 1,000 contacts, 2,000 contacts, 10,000 contacts. All the contacts is there. If the phone is lost, everything is lost, right? So people are dependent on sources of memory to feel that they have knowledge. So if you have more hard disk capacity in your computer, that means you have more memory in your brain. No. How much are you going to retain when you need it the most? Therefore, this classic example in the Mahabharata of what really is knowledge is very pertinent. Karna, he took teachings from Parashuram, and you know, he fooled him to get knowledge. You know, just like sometimes nowadays they hack, you know, other computers to take knowledge from each other. So just by hacking, you know, so Karna was the first hacker practically. You know, so he tried to hack into Parashuram's, you know, school, college, and tried to get all the data. So he got all the data, but Parashuram took away the password. So he had all the data. Parashuram gave him a curse in the end. So it seems that Karna did a perfect job, got all the data, he knows how to use every astra properly, he knows all the mantras. What Parashuram did, changed the password in the end. And the Parashuram told him, when you need it the most, password will not work. So knowledge is not the question of data. Knowledge is a question of actually a changed heart, a transformed heart. So people in today's world have ability to retain knowledge by the dint of whatever intellectual strength they have, and of course by the dint of the cunningness. But whether that knowledge is going to be practically applicable and useful to you is something that you can't judge. On the other hand, if you study Hanumanji, in the Ramayana, there is a description of how Hanumanji learned from his teacher. So his teacher was Suryadev and the sun god. So Hanuman was very eager to learn from the sun god. And he went to Suryadev to seek admission in his school. Suryadev said, you know, my school is full. You know, somehow, you know, schools are always full every time, right? Nowadays, number of schools are increasing, but always they are full. And Suryadev's school was genuinely full. So his school was a movable school. So he was an eager teacher. So therefore, even when he was moving, he was teaching. So he was constantly moving, and thousands of sages were sitting in his chariot and learning from him. And while Suryadev was teaching, so Hanumanji said, I also want to learn. So Suryadev said, there's no place in the chariot. Hanumanji, for him, his eagerness to learn was more important than space and time. Because he had that enthusiasm and eagerness to learn, he said, I don't mind. I will fly along with you. So he was flying along with Suryadev, and Suryadev was speaking. So Suryadev never repeated one word. And Hanumanji never said, ah, what did you say? Never. So just imagine, you know, what a student this Hanumanji was. So Suryadev was flying full speed. Hanumanji is flying at full speed. And Suryadev is constantly speaking, and Hanumanji is constantly listening. Still, no data loss. Absolutely no data loss. Hanumanji grabbed everything. And at some point, Hanumanji felt that this is very impersonal. So I am flying parallel to my teacher. I should be seeing him face to face. You know? Therefore, when the concept of learning from a teacher is learning sitting under the feet of a teacher, not, you know, through internet, through earphone and all that. That's fine. But whenever you get an opportunity, you should run to sit under the feet of a teacher and learn. So Hanumanji, he said, I can't see my teacher. I'm flying parallel to him. So it's very offensive. So Hanumanji turned behind and started walking backwards. So you can imagine, at full speed, Suryadev is flying and Hanumanji is walking backwards, still learning. So that's eagerness. So the result of that eagerness was that Suryadev asked him, when Hanumanji finished the schooling, Hanumanji said, please tell me, what should I do for you? Suryadev said that, if you want to give me Guru Dakshina, if you are really wanting to give, then my son is there, his name is Sugriv. Of course, Suryadev knew that he was not a very capable guy to handle himself. So he said, you go and assist him, be his secretary, be his minister. Hanumanji, he said, no problem. He went and he remained with Sugriv for such a long time. And he never ever complained that what my teacher has done to me. He has put me under somebody who has no brains only. No. See, generally, somebody who is very intelligent, very difficult to be under somebody who is less intelligent. Yeah? So he's always looking for an opportunity to find fault. But Hanumanji, if you study properly, he never found one fault with Sugriv. Though he knew unlimited faults exist. So he never pointed out to Sugriv. He was teaching because he was loyal to his teacher. So if you study these two examples, Karna and Hanumanji. So the result was that Hanumanji, and of course, Krishna. When Krishna learned from Sandipani Muni, the famous pastime where Krishna was with Sandipani Muni, and Sandipani Muni told him that he'll get some wood. So he and Sudama went to get wood, and they got lost in the forest, and it started raining very heavily. So they were sitting on top of the tree with logs of wood in their hand and holding each other's hands, right? So when Sandipani Muni saw them the next day when he came searching, he was so touched by their determination to stay together and by their determination to do service to him. Sandipani Muni gave them a blessing. He told Krishna, just see, this is a teacher blessing the Supreme Lord. He told him that whatever you have learned, you will never forget in your life. And he told him, whenever you need the knowledge the most, the knowledge will come to you straight. So Karna He learned everything from the teacher, but he forgot to please the teacher. And as a result, when he needed the knowledge the most, he lost it. But here, Krishna's example and Hanumanji's example, when there is eagerness, knowledge is not just a matter of retaining information, but knowledge is a matter of applying the information. So, smriti is decreasing because the concept of taking shelter is decreasing. And again, another thing that the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam explains, that when wealth alone will be considered the sign of a man's proper behavior and fine qualities. So if somebody has wealth, that means he's, you know, considered to be having the right qualities. Like if you go to any house or some company where there is unlimited amount of opulence available, you find that people inside that campus also behaving in a certain way. They think that, you know, because they have so much wealth, they're supposed to be well-behaved, you know. They behave in a certain way. And wealth is unfortunately mistaken to be man's only substance. And it is also said that if somebody is having wealth, that man will be considered to be born in a good family. You know, very interesting. And then further it says that law and justice will be applied only on the basis of one's power. So if somebody has power, you'll get the, you know, law. So it is explained that in the Vedic criteria, a man is considered high class if his behavior is enlightened. And his behavior is considered to be enlightened if his activities are dedicated to promoting happiness of all living entities. So in today's world, what is considered to be high class? If you have too much wealth, that is considered to be high class. But in the Vedic lifestyle, what is considered to be high class? If your behavior is for promoting happiness in other people's lives, that is considered to be high class. Therefore, Brahminical people would never take money. If you study the Vedic culture, Brahmanas would never take money. Brahmanas would only teach. And the kings would maintain the Brahmanas. So because the kings would maintain the Brahmanas never had to run around for wealth. All their needs were taken care of. And their needs were petty. They were not asking for exorbitant things. In today's world, the first thing you ask is salary. You know, how much you will give. You know? So if a teacher, unless the fifth pay commission is, you know, implemented in some college or school, you will not go only inside. So the point is that the Brahminical culture is a culture of giving. And the duty of the government is to maintain. So the anxiety of the Brahmana is not to take or not to grab because his needs are less. And the need of the king is to gain knowledge. And to gain knowledge, he would facilitate the Brahmana. So Chanakya Pandit, you know, it's a very typical example, probably one of the last Brahmanas, where he actually lived a life, he would live outside the city. He would not enter the kingdom at all. And the moment, you know, we study his life, very fascinating. Many people misunderstand Chanakya Pandit, thinking that this person was obsessed with power. You know, practically everybody around him, even his own disciple Chandragupta, at one point he was feeling that, you know, my teacher Chanakya Pandit is obsessed with power. So he was manipulating kingdoms left, right, center. He would not lift a weapon. He never in his life held a weapon. But without holding a weapon, he would manipulate kingdoms. So kingdoms would shake, you know, when Chanakya Pandit would move around, you know. And one thing, you know, the quality of Chanakya Pandit was that he would never speak. He would never speak what is in his mind. He would not speak to his best friend also. He would not speak to anyone. So because he would not speak, people were bewildered. They always kept spies on him, but he never spoke. Because he never spoke, what will the spy understand, right? Everything is in his mind only. And Chanakya Pandit, just by using his intelligence, he practically, you know, manipulated the whole kingdom. But at the end, when everything was set right, you know, Chandragupta was made the king, he walked off. He made somebody else a minister, he walked off. That shows that here is a detached Brahmana, detached teacher. And his principle was always that Sikshak or teachers can never, you know, rule. So here, you know, it is explained that in Vedic criteria, a man is considered to be high class if his behavior is enlightened, and a man's behavior is enlightened if his activities are dedicated to promoting happiness to others. Very interesting. And then further, it is explained that those who prevail, you know, in this animalistic competition, they become the top dogs of modern society. And how a person is considered to be top, he explained. Their consumer power grants them a reputation as the most respectable in aristocratic society. You know, if we study in today's world, how a country is considered to be having, you know, the top country. If the consumer, if the ability to consume is more. So because the ability of America to consume is more, it's considered to be the top country of the world. No matter how they use it, that's not asked. Consume is important. How it is used is not asked. So therefore, people are being promoted. Take more, take more, take more, take more. Whether you need or no is not asked. I remember in the previous times when we were young, if one person in the family would buy a shirt or a t-shirt, that would continue for like three generations, four generations, you know. The father would wear, then his son would wear, then his younger brother would wear, then the servant would wear. One t-shirt continuing for ages. But now, the father or the son will never think of wearing the dress of the father. He said, come on, you give me something old. Not thinking that it is valuable, right? So, consumerism is considered to be important. And the law is applied unequally. So, this one of the criteria is that those who are powerful get to control, manipulate. And those who are powerless have practically no way to handle it. Unfortunately, before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was a lawyer. And, you know, the company in which we would work for, very interesting, you know, system we would follow. The client would come to us saying that, you know, we were doing these patent cases, you know, a lot of patents. So these were big inventions. Each of these inventions can cost like millions of dollars. And when companies would come to us saying that, you know, we want you to prove that, you know, somebody else has invented the same thing and we are the real owners. So we would ask them, what do you want first? They would tell us that, you know, you have to prove that this is original and true and that one is false and not original. So there's no problem. So we would study the case in such a way and remove finer points in such a way that whether it is a fact or no, we could prove the opposite. You know, this is how law is. Very flexible, you know. Law is like gold, you know. If you take gold, put it in fire, you can immediately melt it, make different ornaments out of it. That's how law is. Somebody is intelligent, he knows to use the law properly, he can manipulate it completely to his own, you know, whims and fancies. Unfortunately, the law of karma doesn't function like this, you know. So you may fool the laws of the world, the laws of the government, but how can you fool the law of karma? You know, suppose somebody has, you know, killed 10 people. After killing 10 people, you know, he'll be sentenced to death maximum, and that too, if he is caught. After he's sentenced to death, then what? That's it. Over. But the law of karma doesn't get over there. He has killed 10 people, he has to face 10 different times torture. But the laws of the government can only do it once. So the limitation of the laws of this world is so much, but the limitation of the laws of karma is practically non-existent. So the laws of karma are supremely strong. So when we don't recognize the law of karma, we think that we can manipulate and control the laws of the government. But when one is conscious of the law of karma, he is that much cautious of using the laws of the government. And another thing that is explained in the aspect of Kalki, qualities is that men and women will live together because of superficial attraction. And success in business will depend on deceit. That means for a person to become successful in his business, 100% he has to cheat. You know? That is what symptoms of Kali Yuga are. So womanliness and manliness will be judged according to one's expertise in sex. And a man will be known as a Brahmana just by wearing a thread. You can find it in the taxis of Bombay. So most taxi drivers come and tell us, you know, that Maharaj, Hambi Brahmane, and they remove that thread, you know. Black looking, dirty looking thread in the show. They go, Hamara bhi hai. without understanding what it means to be a Brahmana. And it is explained that in the age of Kali, a woman is considered to be a good woman if she is sexually attractive and indeed sexually efficient. Similarly, a sexually attractive man is a good man. The best example of this superficiality is the incredible attention the 20th century people give to materialistic movie stars and music stars. So the point is that if you study in today's world, who are the heroes? The heroes are the one who have the most sex appeal. People, you know, if you study, just go through the newspapers or internet, anyway, we talk about movie stars. Unless there is some description of the sex appeal of the movie star or the music star, the description doesn't begin also. It begins with a description of how, you know, promiscuous they are. And the more you are, you know, free in that sense, liberal, the more you are considered to be advanced, right? This is, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the symptom of the age of Kali, by the way. And it is explained that those who are clever in juggling words, they are considered to be great scholars. Like one time, when there was a, you know, a person who was giving a talk, very prominent religious leader. And after the talk was over, somebody put up his hand and asked a question. This guy gave a 2-hour talk. After the talk was over, somebody asked a question, put up his hand and asked a question. So question was very complicated. So probably this person didn't understand. So he wanted to, you know, get away with it. So for about 2-3, you know, like about 20 seconds, he kept quiet, closed his eyes. And then he said, words, words, and words. Words are magical. Kept quiet. The whole, you know, the thousands of people started clapping and appreciating that, what an answer, amazing. So the person, he said, when I asked one question, you know, with contained 20 words, it is just words. And when you spoke for 2 hours, that is not words. So the point is that the whole world can see very clearly what is genuinity and what is not, right? So one has to be very careful, like Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, that the symptom of the age of Kali is those who are clever in juggling words. He's considered to be a learned scholar. And of course, the Mahabharata gives a lot of descriptions of symptoms in the age of Kali also. Just quickly go through them and then we can discuss some more aspects. It is explained that this is something very interesting I found. Men will wear robes made of flux. Flux is a particular type of material which is what we call as linen. You know, so that is considered to be like something fashionable, you know. And then the grains that people will consume will be millets. Not considered to be very high class. And then men will regard their wives only as friends. And cows will become extinct in the near future. Shocking, actually. And people will only have goats and chicken like that. And people will dig and plant trees and, you know, grains on the shores of the river bank, very close to the river. Generally, their plantations are not done. But because water will not be available otherwise, they would plant next to the river, still crops will not grow. And father, this is something very shocking. It is explained, the father will enjoy what belongs to the son. And the son will enjoy what belongs to the father, though these are forbidden in the scriptures. It is explained that there will be no joy found everywhere, anywhere. The festivals will stop. And, you know, all these are descriptions that Markandeya Rishi is explaining to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Yudhishthira Maharaj asks Markandeya Muni that, what will happen in future? You know, because he's a king. So he's concerned about the government and the pleasure of his citizens in the future. He has done so much to establish. So Markandeya Muni is saying, after you all are gone, after the Pandavas, after Parikshit Maharaj is gone, this is what will happen. You know, Markandeya Rishi is giving a description. So just imagine Yudhishthira Maharaj's plight. He is the one who has struggled so much to establish dharma, and he is hearing how adharma will start going to prevail in future. And it is explained that people will accept gifts but with a gali. Very interesting. People will accept gifts after giving bad words to the person who is giving. So that means you can actually see it. If you go to a home, you know, where a father has got something for a son and he gives it to him, the son opens the gift, he throws it, he says, "Daddy, what did you get for me? Can't get something better," you know. So the point is that the concept of gratitude will decrease. And people will think that, you know, giving gifts or giving me something is my right. You know, I need it. This is my birthright. And it's explained that because people, the kings, the rulers, are unable to protect their citizens, they will take great pleasure in punishing. So because, you know, it's like opposite, you know. So because they are not able to protect, they need some pleasure to survive, right? So people who derive pleasure in being able to protect, and I can protect my citizens. But because the ability to protect is not there, they go to the opposite side. They start punishing them and derive pleasure that I can punish them, I can control them. So the average age would become 16 years, slowly, over a period of time. And something more shocking. Girls at the age of 5 or 6 years will start getting pregnant. And the boys at the age of 7 to 8 years will become fathers. And the wives will hate to serve their husbands. And Shudras will explain scriptures very eloquently, and Brahmanas will sit in here. Something more interesting. It is explained that the earth will become disfigured by tombs and graveyards instead of temples. The earth will be filled with tombs. And the disciple will not hear from the teacher, but rather plot how to kill the teacher. So women will be sharp in speech, pitiless, fond of weeping, and never listen to their husband. And so many other symptoms. I think if we'll discuss more, we will get dejected. So, it is explained that in this age, people will think they are beautiful depending on their hairstyle. So hairstyle will be the mark of the beauty of a person. You know? Therefore, the richest people will probably be barbers. And filling the belly will become the goal of life. We ask a person, what is the purpose of your life? What is the aim of your life? Fill my belly. That's it. And it is explained that people, those who are pious, those who are, you know, virtuous, they cannot stay in cities. They will run to mountains and to forests. And when they are, and people are, will be so much harassed by famine and so many things that they will be completely disturbed. So this is the scene. And something very interesting. It is explained that by the time the age of Kali ends, the bodies of all the creatures will be greatly reduced in size, and religious principles of followers of Varnashram will be ruined. And the kings will be mostly thieves. The occupation of men will be stealing, lying, and needless violence. And all social classes will be reduced to the lowest level of Shudras. Spiritual hermitages will be not different from mundane houses. Family ties will extend no further than immediate bonds of marriage. And, you know, in the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj explains something very interesting. He says, the so-called religion in this age will be atheistic. So religion means atheism. So atheism will become a religion in future. And he says, in confirmation to the prediction of the Bhagavatam, the United States Supreme Court has recently ruled that to be considered a religion, a system has to be, system of belief need not recognize a supreme being. That means the Supreme Court of the United States has already declared, for something to be a religion, you don't need to have God. You can have a religion without God. Something interesting. So atheism will be considered to be a bona fide religion, you know. So we have just set the scene for what we have to expect. Now we will see who will come to create the transformation. So in this world, people are looking for heroes. Everyone internally is looking for a hero to come and change everything. Of course, many people say that you are the hero. You have to create the change, you know. And, you know, many people bloat up their ego and think that I am the hero. And, you know, they collect thousands of followers, creates, you know, thousands of places. But the fact is that everyone is seeking for a genuine, real hero in their lives. So the Valmiki Ramayana begins with this understanding where Valmiki, he asks Narad Muni a question. He tells Narad Muni that tell me about the person who has no flaws. He gives a list of qualities that a person should have. You know, so many, about 24 qualities Valmiki lists down. And then he tells Narad Muni, you tell me if there is anyone in this world who fills all these qualities, I want to worship that person. So in today's world, hero worship is very common. But when people worship a hero, they don't see whether the hero has a defect or no. So Valmiki, he's asking Narad Muni, don't talk to me about any hero who has even one of these defects. Talk to me about a hero who has no defect. I am only interested in such a hero. So if you study in that way, the way Valmiki is trying to study, you will be shocked that none of the heroes will ever be able to fulfill any of the criteria. So somebody has beauty, no brain. Somebody has brains, no beauty. Somebody has knowledge, no wealth. Somebody has wealth, shameless. Somebody has shame, but he is, you know, exploiting others. So many qualities. So you find one quality in a person, after 2 minutes you'll find one quality is missing. You find another quality in a person, you find another quality is missing. So in your search for finding the right hero to worship, you find practically no one. So Narad Muni, he tells Valmiki Muni that I know who the hero who has all these qualities in full. And then the moment Narad Muni tells this, he tells him, give me a minute. You know, I'll tell you who that hero is. So was he calculating? You know, he's like analyzing all the heroes of the world, you know. You know, this Khan, that Shah, you know, whatever. Is Narad Muni analyzing all the heroes one by one, trying to find out who is the real hero who fits in all the 24, you know, qualities that Valmiki is addressing? No. He knows who the hero is. Just remembering that hero, Narad Muni starts trembling internally. He starts trembling. And then he tells Valmiki Muni, I'll tell you who the hero is. And after 5 minutes, he tells him, the hero is Lord Ram. So the point is that unless we are satisfied by worshipping the true hero, first of all, finding the true hero, and after that, worshipping the true hero, we will never be able to give up these false heroes that are coming and going, right? Every hero who comes, he also goes, never stays eternally. So Kalki Avatar is that hero who is going to appear very soon, just about 4,27,000 years down the line. So many people, there is also speculation. People think that, you know, in 1992, somebody speculated that in 2012, Kalki Avatar will appear and destroy everything. In 1970s, somebody speculated that 2001, some Kalki Avatar is going to appear. So, of course, all of them have gone for a toss. Nowhere Kalki Avatar has appeared. And those who got that information, they claim themselves, they themselves are Kalki Avatar, you know. So one fellow said, I am Kalki Avatar. In 2001, he appeared exactly, you know. So things like that. So the point is, when Kalki Avatar will appear, what will happen? I'm just going to give you a few samples of what the scriptures describe, what will happen and what Kalki will do, which will give us a brief understanding of what can happen. Hopefully, none of us will be around to experience it. We probably, hopefully, will go back to the spiritual world by then. So Kalki Avatar, it is explained that he appears in a town called Sambhala, and he appears in a Brahminical family. His father will be a personality called Vishnu Yasha. And when he'll be born in a Brahminical family, of course, but he will take training of Kshatriya arms, and he will have a horse named Devadatta, and on this horse he will mount and travel across the globe, destroying systematically people who are envious, who are godless, and who are destructive in their leadership. And it is explained that he will kill all those rulers who are dressed as kings only for namesake, dressed as rulers only for namesake. And this sword, which the famous sword which Kalki, you know, appears to be holding all the time, is given by Lord Shiva and Parvati Devi to Kalki. And the same Shiva and Parvati are explaining that there's a fascinating story about how Kalki Avatar marries Padmavati in the Kalki Puran. And I'll just tell in brief. It is explained that Padmavati is a beautiful princess who is none other than the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi herself. And she is waiting for the Supreme Lord to appear. And when Shukadeva Goswami is a parrot in the spiritual world. So here also he plays the role of a parrot who kind of goes from, you know, gives a message of Kalki to Padmavati and Padmavati message to Kalki, you know. So when Kalki is born, Padmavati, she gets a benediction from Lord Shiva and Parvati that whatever she, whatever person she sees, if the person is seeing her with lusty eyes, the person will become a woman. So Padmavati gets frustrated with this benediction because her father, you know, arranges for big swayamvara ceremonies. Every king who comes is becoming a woman, you know. So no king is able to marry her. So she gets very frustrated. What kind of a benediction Shiva gave? She thinks that he has given a curse to her. And then finally, you know, this parrot comes and tells her that, you know, your Lord Vishnu has appeared in another place. The parrot, she decorates the parrot with beautiful ornaments, gold, and she sends the parrot back. So the parrot tells Kalki, and you know, Kalki Avatar, he comes on his horse to where Padmavati was, and he stays on the bank of a river. And Padmavati Devi comes with all her friends, all those kings who have become her maid servants, you know, are kind of accompanying her. And they all come, and Kalki, you know, she is very fearful to approach Kalki because she's thinking that, you know, what if he also becomes a girl, you know. So she's like in great fear. So always the scriptures, they have some twists and turns to make things more exciting. Just imagine, you know, if Kalki goes and marries her, everything is over, you know. Not so exciting. So scriptures always create the excitement. Lord Ram has to break a bow. Lord Krishna has to kidnap Rukmini Devi. You know, then Satyabhama has to be pleased in a different way. So these excitements are created by the scriptures so that our heart, which is conditioned to experience great, you know, love stories, has also fulfillment in the scriptures. But we don't get to experience it, but rather we get to hear it. So when you try to experience it, you're trying to actually act in the way that God is acting. So that's the original problem the living entity has, to become like God. So everybody eulogizes their own love stories, you know. Therefore the film industry is filled with, you know, people's love stories. You know, every film is how a hero and heroine come together in a very unique way, you know, overcoming unique problems in their life and unlimited obstacles. Finally they're together. After they're together, no analysis is made. Because then symptoms of the age of Kali. So that part is kept secret, you know. So if you analyze the symptoms in the age of Kali, then you'll get more stories. Therefore, all those stories to hear, you have to come to Srimad Bhagavatam class. So when you study from the scriptures, we get the most fascinating love stories, but at the same time, those love stories purify our heart. When you talk about the marriage of the Supreme Lord with the Goddess of Fortune, that marriage is also a marriage between us and the Supreme Lord at the same time. So whenever we hear the beautiful pastimes of devotees being united with the Lord, those are the pastimes that can unite us with the Lord. And when, you know, Lord Vishnu, he finally marries Padmavati, and then Kalki, he goes ahead and he starts, you know, destroying systematically. So it is explained that he goes to a place where there are thousands and lakhs of Buddhists, you know, who are actually completely, you know, having a negative mindset. He kills, destroys their whole race, and then he goes and attacks Milechas. So practically, I mean, Kalki is like traveling around the globe, you know, different continents, destroying all the impious rulers who are exploiting. And then there's a nice, interesting explanation of Kalki when he goes and destroys some Milecha country. Thousands and lakhs of Milechas are killed. Then what happens is that the husbands are all dead. The women come out with weapons in their hand to attack Kalki, you know. So something very interesting. And they come with weapons in their hand to attack. And when they come in front of Kalki, the weapons, they transform. And the weapons get personified. And the personified weapon starts talking to them, saying that, telling them that, you fool, why are you attacking the Supreme Lord? Take shelter of him. And all of them take shelter of, this, of Kalki. And then, of course, Kalki goes further, and there is an interesting description of last story of Kalki. I'm not going into details of these stories because I don't know where I'm supposed to. But there's one story of one lady whom Kalki meets. Her name is Kutodhari. And this lady is a huge demoness. She is connected to the Ramayana. She is Kumbhakarna. His son is a person called Nikumbha. And Nikumbha's daughter is Kutodhari. And she is living in the Himalayan mountains. She is huge. And when, you know, she has a son who is like equally huge demon. So when she's breastfeeding him, she's lying down and her pillow is the Himalayan mountains. That is the description. And the milk from her breast flows down and it becomes like, because it's the ice cold Himalayas, it becomes like a river, which is freezed, glazed river, you know. So Kalki, he goes and he destroys her. And then her son, he comes to fight. He's like a five-year-old boy. But five-year-old boy is like a violent, huge demon. He comes and attacks Kalki, and Kalki kills him also. And then finally, what Kalki Avatar, he does is that he establishes, before winding up his pastimes, so Kalki comes in the junction where two yugas meet. The Dwapar Yuga, the Kali Yuga and the next Satya Yuga. So he comes in that junction. And what he does is that he creates a system where Varanashram can function again. So the only thing that the Supreme Lord does, he annihilates people who are demonic, who will never change, and he puts a king who is pure-hearted. So the Supreme Lord's function always is the same. Whether you consider Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, any Yuga, when the Supreme Lord comes, he doesn't get into the control business. Supreme Lord doesn't get into controlling things of affairs of the material world. He allots and walks away. He is a gentleman. He is detached. So Krishna, when he conquered, killed Jarasandha through Bhima, Krishna never said, now Jarasandha's kingdom is my kingdom. He made the son of Jarasandha king and he walked away. Because he saw that there is good qualities in the son of Jarasandha. So similarly, when Raman was killed by Lord Ram, Ram never said, now Ayodhya and Lanka together, you know. Ram made the Vibhishan, you know, the brother of Ravan, the king, and he walked away, you know. Similarly, when he killed Vali, he didn't tell Sugriva, come on, I killed him, who are you, you know. And he didn't sit on the throne. He made Sugriva the king and he walked away. So similarly, Kalki, as soon as he won over all the negative forces, he made two people who were descendants of the dynasty of Lord Ram, who were known as Maru and Devapi, he made them the king and he walked away. And Kalki Avatar, he walks away for what? So that the next Yuga can come and the pastimes can continue. So when Lord Kalki ends his pastime, what is established is the Varanashram system again, where Brahmanas are doing what the Brahmanas are supposed to do, Kshatriyas are doing what Kshatriyas are supposed to do, Vaishyas are doing what they are supposed to do, and what Shudras are doing what they are supposed to do. So as soon as the social order is established, Krishna walks away. That means it is so important from having a dharmic rule to have Varanashram established. And the whole struggle of a king, the whole struggle of the government is to make sure people do what they are supposed to do. That's it. So therefore, the Varnashram system is considered to be such a systematic system where people are not doing something that they're not supposed to do. In today's world, people don't know whether they're Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. They only know that what is the way to get money. That's it. They're not interested in understanding what their nature is. They're not interested in understanding how we can contribute to society. They're only interested in how to take. Therefore, when the Supreme Lord establishes a system, he establishes a system which not only handles the nature of the person, but it also handles the environment around him. So, so Kalki Avatar, he ends his pastime by showing the connection of an ideal leader, that is Devapi and Maru, and people who are ready to follow that leader. And all those who are not ready to follow, he annihilates and walks away. This is what Lord Kalki Avatar, he does. So every time, whenever there is an increase in irreligion, there is a simultaneously increase in the principle of Godhood who comes at different ages, at different times. Of course, at this point of time, we have a long time to go for Kalki Avatar to appear. What do we do in the meantime? That's now the question that we need to address, you know. So we can't be, you know, waiting, when will Kalki Avatar come to destroy all these guys, you know. We should be talking about what we can do to contribute so that in spite of living in an environment where Kali is prominent, quarrel and hypocrisy is prominent, how do we actually handle the environment in such a way that we do not become instruments in the age of Kali, but rather we become instruments in the age of the Supreme Lord. So that is the most important thing for us to understand. But for us to understand that, we need to understand how powerful the Supreme Lord is, not only in his person, but also in his name, in his form as Archavigraha, and in his association as devotees around us. So to make us understand that, I will tell you a small story, and then we will go into the philosophical aspect. So one time, this is in the Puranas, the story. There is a story of two vultures. You know, there was a male and a female vulture. And these two vultures, they're flying, you know, at one point of time. Vultures, what they fly for? They fly to see, you know, dead animals, dead things around. So the nature of the vulture is always to find something contaminating which it can contemplate on. So people, if they are like vultures, so, you know, Govindru was mentioning this very interesting thing, that culture and vulture have only one word difference, one letter difference, you know. So if people don't have culture, they are like vultures only. So if culture is missing in a person's life, automatically V comes in. So people become like vultures. And what people do when they are like vultures is they look from top what dirt is there in a person and, you know, feast on that dirt. Feast on criticizing others, feast on, you know, finding faults in an organization, feast on somehow or the other finding discrepancy. You cannot imagine how much people can write about the fault of very, very big devotees. So the point is, you know, somebody was analyzing, if somebody has the ability to write a 100-page article on how, you know, the other person is having so many faults, that means, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasthakur would say, that the reason we find faults in others is because we are honeycombed with faults. So, you know, recently I was observing a honeycomb, you know, somebody got a honeycomb, you know, in our deity kitchen, in Madhuram kitchen. I was doing honeycomb, and that was an immediate statement that struck me, you know. Only if the person is honeycombed with faults, he can see so many faults in others. So I was seeing how a honeycomb is. Honeycomb is so intricate, so tight, you know. So it means, even before, you know, if you assume that different faults that we see are like boxes in a honeycomb. So before one box gets over, other box starts, you know. So people who are honeycombed with faults, that means they have so much filled with faults. Therefore, they do not lose even one moment in finding fault with others. So these vultures, they were flying in the air. And this male and female vulture were looking for, you know, some dirt somewhere. And suddenly they found another vulture, you know. Generally, association is very important in everywhere, you know. So the moment they saw another vulture, they said, this vulture, you know, must be having the secret, you know. Because we two are together all the time. We have not found the secret where the, you know, the rot is. So this fellow must be having. So generally the association of people, when they try to associate with people who are lower in their consciousness, they compete with each other how to find the lowest in others. Now, so somebody who is, you know, able to find something low, he goes immediately to that person. Hey, what is the latest low in the other person? You know? So trying to kind of gratify themselves with all the low things that you can talk about. So this vulture went to this other vulture. So they said, you know, where is the hide? So this vulture said, I'll take you. So then all the three vultures flew. They didn't know that this second vulture, the third vulture, was a tamed vulture of a hunter. So this hunter had sent that vulture to capture these two vultures. So this, you know, tamed vulture took them straight and they got trapped in a net of the hunter. So the hunter took both these vultures in his hand and he took them. This was in the very infamous, now of course always eternally famous, but this is in the Muktinath area. This story happened. And this happened in the Gandaki River, you know, where the Gandaki River was. And this hunter took both these vultures and banged them on rocks. And these rocks happened to be Shaligram Shilas. And he banged them on rocks. And these both died. The moment these vultures were killed, they got 400 Vishnu forms, the celestial forms, went straight back to the spiritual world, to the Vaikuntha planets. And eventually, you know, they came after spending a certain amount of time in the Vaikuntha planets. They were allotted a position in the Brahmaloka. And then they were given position in the demigod society. And then eventually they became great kings in the earthly planet. And they perfected the life and then eventually went back to the spiritual world. So the reason I'm telling you this story is because if vultures who are always finding dirt in others, the only contact which they had in their life was that their head was banged against a Shaligram Shila while they were dying. And they reached the Vaikuntha planet. Just imagine all of us who are having human bodies living in an atmosphere where we can find a devotee next door any given point of time. Or at least a devotee is one phone call away. You know, so living in such an atmosphere, how much we are fortunate to be in connection with the Supreme Lord, Shaligram Shila, in the form of the holy names, in the form of the association of devotees. So therefore, the way in which the effects of Kali Yuga can be counteracted, even before Kalki comes, is if we can take shelter of something which is stable. So in today's world, I began with the description of how people are living life which is superficial, because they are like waves of an ocean, you know. Therefore, nowadays, surfing is a very interesting sport people like to play. Because constantly they're living life of surfing only, you know. So they surf the internet, they surf the waters, they're surfing everywhere, you know. Actually, surfing is not surfing, but Prabhupada would call it suffering. Prabhupada, somehow or the other, you know, he could never pronounce surfing. Whenever he would say, what are they doing? They're suffering, Prabhupada would say, you know. Literally, that's what people are doing, right? So if we do not want to suffer, then we don't have to surf, but rather dive. And therefore, Krishna consciousness is considered to be the greatest depth in elevation and consciousness. So Radhanand Swami Maharaj, one time he was talking about how humility is a process where you're bending down, but you're actually going higher. So similarly, spirituality is a process where you're going deeper in the ocean, trying to go deeper and deeper into spiritual pastimes of the Lord, but where you're going higher and higher to the spiritual world. So this is something we'll never be able to understand how it works. But the only thing we understand is that it works. And in this age of Kali, before we summarize all the avatars, I would like to just mention something which I heard many, many years back about how when one enters very deeply in connection with the Lord through chanting of the holy names, through association with the devotees, and through remembering his holy pastimes, that person can actually feel and actually experience the connection. This is the example that is given of sealing wax. You know, in the olden times, when they would seal envelopes, they would seal with different color of waxes, you know, and each color would indicate the information, the quality of the information. Suppose it is like a top secret information, it would be sealed with red color wax. Suppose it's some, you know, different type of information, it would be colored different color waxes. And the way they would color these waxes is that they would melt the wax, and then they would add color into it, and they would mix together, and what would form would be like a solid color wax. You could never take out the color from it, right? Impossible. So it is explained that the great devotees of the Lord, their heart is compared to wax, and Krishna's holy names are compared to the color. And it is explained that when devotees chant the holy names of the Lord, the heart is in the is a state of melting practically, and Krishna, who is like this color, enters and mixes and becomes like an integral part of the heart. And then you try to separate out Krishna, it doesn't come out only, right? So therefore, when we get connected to the Supreme Lord through chanting his holy names, through associating with the devotees, and through taking shelter of the glorious pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Lord will become a part of our heart which cannot be removed, right? And the gopis of Vrindavan were very much in that mood. It is explained that if you know, study Krishna's form, Krishna is having this threefold bending form. So many people ask, why is he standing in such an odd way, you know? I mean, he couldn't find a better way to stand. So many people ask, what is this? So there is a reason why Krishna stands like that. And the reason why Krishna stands like that is for our benefit only. We don't understand why he stands like that for our benefit. It is explained that if you have a bottle, you know, which is like having a small neck, and if you put a straw in the bottle, the straw can immediately come out. But if the straw is bent in three ways, very difficult to come out, right? So when Krishna enters our heart, he enters straight. But then inside he goes and takes the threefold bending form, tribhanga form. So that even if you want to take him out, he cannot come out. So that's the glory of the Supreme Lord in our lives. So when we take shelter of the Supreme Lord in that way, then we can perfect our life. So just in 2 minutes, I will just conclude all the 10 avatars, because next we are welcoming, the next Sunday, we'll be welcoming Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, into our lives. So just to summarize, it is explained that the first incarnation was the Matsya Avatar, and the Matsya Avatar, he gave protection to the Vedas, which had become immersed in the turbulent sea of devastation. Then the Supreme Lord assumed the form of a tortoise, which is a Kurma Avatar, and in this incarnation as a divine tortoise, he accepted the Mandara mountain upon his gigantic back as a pivot, and churned the ocean of milk, helped in churning the ocean of milk. And from holding the huge mountain, a large scar-like depression is formed on the back of the Supreme Lord, which is the most glorious. So taking so much trouble for, because the Mandara mountain was a golden mountain, and gold, when it is uprooted, when it is taken out, suddenly it forms all these deformations, very sharp cavities. And then the third incarnation was the boar incarnation, where when the earth had become submerged in the Garbhodaka ocean, he picked it up and he kept it on his tusk, and from which, you know, he brought it on top, and he killed Hiranyaksha. And the next incarnation, he appeared as Narsingadev, who can easily crush a wasp, just like, you know, one could easily crush a wasp on one's fingers. Similarly, he used his nails to crush the wasp-like body of Hiranyakashipu and ripped it apart to protect Prahlad. And then as a dwarf incarnation, he took a massive steps to deceive King Bali, and he brought the Ganges water down. And from the Ganges water, which is now purifying the world, is emanating. And Vamanadeva also continued serving Bali as his gatekeeper. And then in the next incarnation, he appeared as Parashuram, another incarnation of the Lord, which was destroying all the demonic forces with his axe. And he created a huge tract of land retracted from the sea. and then he appeared as Lord Ramachandra, and he destroyed the 10-headed Ravan, Dashagriv, and he distributed his heads as a delightful offering to the 10 directions headed by Indra, and by this he delivered the great devotees of the Lord from the suffering. And then he appeared as Balramji with a plow in his hand, and he was color of a fresh blue rain cloud, and he was wearing garments of a fresh blue rain cloud, and these garments were colored like the hue of the river Yamuna, and who feels great fear due to being stricken by your plow, Balramji. And he also, of course, delivered Romarshana Sutta. And then he appeared as Lord Buddha. With compassion in his heart, he stopped the slaughtering of animals mercilessly, and he took over the Vedic scriptures from the point of view of saving these animals. And then finally, today we saw how Kalki has appeared like a comet, carrying a terrific sword in his hand, bringing annihilation to the wicked barbarian men at the end of Kali Yuga. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? There is. Question.
My question is how to correlate these two predictions where we understand from the scriptures that where Lord says my name will be chanted in every village and town, and secondly this scary prediction given about Kali Yuga.
So the question is, how do you correlate these two predictions? So of course the two predictions are spaced about 4,07,000 years apart. That is the first thing, because when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that my holy names will be chanted in every town and village, he's talking about the next 10,000 years, which is like the prediction, which is the golden age within Kali Yuga. So the Supreme Lord is so kind that within this dark age, he has created a golden age. So it is just like, you know, if you have a box which is black in color, and inside that you put a gold ring. So what stands out is the gold ring, not the box, right? So similarly, in Kali Yuga, which is like a black box, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inserted 10,000 years of a golden ring. And fortunately, we are born within that age of 10,000 years. So for us, we don't have to wait how the box looks. We have to experience the pleasure of how the golden ring is, right? So therefore, for us who are actually connected to the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this prediction that in the next 10,000 years are going to be golden age is more important. And of course, we also understand that if we don't take shelter of this prediction, then there's another prediction waiting for us. That's how we can reconcile. Hare Krishna. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Dashavatar ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.